You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, October 22nd, 2025. Grandpa Dan streaming with you, RadioAlbion.com. You're wondering, what the hell am I doing here on a Wednesday of all times? And as you know, I didn't have a Monday show up. The Parish of the Patriots did go up yesterday. And perhaps you found this show today because you came looking for, or perhaps will come looking for, Dr. Johnson's Orthodox Nationalist show today. After all of my Parish of the Patriots show yesterday, I said Dr. Johnson would be here today. Where is Dr. J? Well, it's been a heck of a week at Radio Albion, and Dr. Johnson's had some, we'll just say, some circumstances come up, and was unable to get an Orthodox Nationalist show done today. It's going to be fine. I don't want y'all to be like freaked out or anything. I'm also not going to get into what those circumstances are because it's not my place to share them. I don't know if he wants to share it or not. That's up to him. And y'all know how I am about privacy, whether it's respecting Dr. Johnson's fans or y'all's. When I hear from you, you know, I always do my utmost to respect other people's privacy. And so, you know, again, Dr. J's fine. It's going to be fine. I don't know if he'll be here tomorrow, if he'll be able to get his Thursday Daily Nationalist up. If he does, I'll be sure and get that up for y'all, and it'll be here. If it's not, it's not. Hopefully everything will be back to normal next week, one way or the other. As I teased, if you came looking for this show on Monday, I put a little teaser in my note explaining, you know, why the show wouldn't be up. I really want to thank y'all again for your patience in dealing with Radio Albion. You know, I know it's been kind of like a skeleton crew limping along. And your patience is going to be rewarded. We're looking forward to, hopefully in the fairly near future, we're going to see the site get an update, much needed upgrade, update. You know, it'll take a little time for that to come about. But things are going to get better here. And again, I want to express my appreciation on behalf of all of us here for y'all sticking with us, because I know it's stale. I know, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Matt and myself both, we do our best to put up best content we can. But I mean, the site looks the same, has looked the same for years now. And it's just two of us putting content up here where y'all used to get a wide variety of different content. And again, I appreciate y'all sticking with us through all of this. Just continue to bear with us. We're kind of on the home stretch here, and things are going to change. We're going to see, like I say, we're finally going to get a much-needed update, upgrade, facelift for the site. And I'm confident it's going to be good. So continue to bear with us. We're in the home stretch, and I appreciate it. Again, Dr. J couldn't be with us for the Orthodox Nationalist today. I wanted to at least get something up today. So we're going to do this, and I'm not doing a Wednesday version of Daily Mail Monday, whether you're going to find that as a relief or as a disappointment is up to you. I thought I would do something different since I don't normally do a show on Wednesdays. And I'm going to do something completely different, kind of. I'm going to use an article from RT. I haven't used RT in a long, long time, because primarily back in the Biden days, they were really moving, hyping this conflict with Russia thing up, and things were looking like at some point the United States could declare, well, you know, RT, you're supporting, aiding and comfort to the enemy. It was kind of getting that crazy, and preemptively, I didn't want to get myself into a position to have something like that leveled my way. That's kind of chilled out, so I am going to use RT. Again, the other hesitation is I know those of you in like a lot of European countries, and I believe the UK as well, you can't, you know, I'm going to put a link to the article I'm using, but it's not going to do you any good because y'all are, for some reason, not allowed to view RT because, yeah, you have lunatics running your country that would rather create a Russian boogeyman versus have to face their own incompetence. But I am going to use an article from RT, and it's actually an opinion piece. And it's a good opinion piece, and at the same time, I think they're missing a bigger picture. And as I was looking at this and thinking of using it, I got to thinking about, you know, what might I be missing in this bigger picture? And we'll get into that. I think it'll make for a decent discussion. And hopefully worth y'all listening to. So let's get on into it. And the headline is, this is by Graham. I'm not going to say his last name correctly, I'm sure. But Graham Hryce, H-R-Y-C-E. He's an Australian journalist and former media lawyer whose work has been published in The Australian, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, The Sunday Mail, and The Spectator and Quadrant. And the headline of this is Why Western Conservative Parties Are Doomed. The inability to grasp the concerns of voters and resolve internal divisions will be the death of British and Australian conservatives. Another reason I picked this article is it actually deals with British and Australian, because I know we've been very America-centric for several years now with the loss of Sven Longshanks. So let's go ahead and get into this, and I probably will. At first, I wouldn't plan to go through the whole thing. I think I will. I think it'll be worth doing, and we'll get into some stuff. I don't know that I've ever used someone else's opinion piece to do one of these shows, so I'm in new territory. It's a good opinion piece, but I think he's also missing the forest for the trees in the discussion, and I'll get into that as we go along. Perhaps the most noticeable feature of politics in the West in recent years has been the swift and irreversible demise of traditional conservative parties. The disappearance of these parties has been dramatically illustrated by the grim fates that now await the UK Conservative Party and the Liberal National Party coalition in Australia. The Conservative Party governed the UK from 2010 until last year. The coalition government held office in Australia from 1996 to 2007 and from 2013 until 2022. Both of these parties were soundly defeated at the polls by ideologically unified social democratic parties that were led by uninspiring and pedestrian politicians, namely Keir Starmer and Anthony Albanese. This suggests that voters rejected the Conservatives rather than warmly embracing their social democratic opponents. UK Labour's rapid fall from grace since last year's election victory and the party's current unpopularity confirms the correctness of this view. Now I'll stop there because this is something I have been saying since the Tories got drubbed out in the UK. I'm not up on UK politics that much, but I'm way more up on UK politics than Australian politics. On the Australian front, we'll just have to take this guy's word for it, because I, as little as I may know about UK politics, I know absolutely nothing pretty much about Australian politics. But yeah, no, absolutely, this is what I was saying when the Tories got drubbed out and Keir Starmer wound up in there. I was saying that this is not, people didn't wake up one day in the UK and say, well, we love labor now. We love immigrants. We love labor policies. And so they voted out the Tories. No, what happened was people that were voting for the Tories and never getting what they voted for. How many different Tories ran and they're going to finally do something about the migrant problem? Nothing. Nothing going all in. Nothing ever happens. Nothing ever happens. They say, oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. And nothing ever happens. So at some point in time, People didn't run out and vote for Labor. They just quit bothering to show up for the Tories. And by default, because it's a two-party system, you wind up with the Labor Party getting in power. And of course, immediately their numbers tank because nobody supported what they wanted in the first place. At the end of the day, there's no difference between the conservative, these traditional conservative parties, and you can apply this in America as well, and I'll get into that here in a bit. There's literally no difference between them and their supposed opposition. Just names, faces, people jockeying for position, putting on a show for the telly. There's no actual substantive difference. You're going to get migrants, whether you like it or not. People have made it clear over and over again, they don't want migrants. They're sick of the migrants. This idea that, you know, they were originally trying to sell this as, oh, we've got to have these people to pay the pensions. Nobody believes that shit anymore. They're not even, they themselves aren't even trying that line anymore because it's so stupid. But you notice there's no alternative. There's not, okay, well, they're not going to pay the pensions, but we have to have the migrants for this. I mean, they're not even, as far as I know, they're not really even giving an excuse anymore just because we have to. It's inevitable. It's a part of our values of who we are. We just accept infinity people from Africa or the Middle East or wherever the hell else. Never was before, but somehow that's the new history. More troubling for conservatives in the UK and Australia is the fact that both of these once dominant parties, so shortly after losing office, now find themselves in such acute states of internal disarray and that they have no realistic prospect of regaining office in the foreseeable future. In fact, it is clear that neither party has a viable long-term future at all. Well, why would they? In what real manner do they have any kind of, are they bringing anything to the table different than their opposition? You get liberalism regardless of who you vote for. It's just, are you going to vote for in this instance in the UK, are you going to go vote for the Labour Party, which is openly basically communist, they're open liberalism, or you can vote for the Tories, who are also for liberalism, they just pretend they're not. I mean, is it really shocking that people have decided to quit coming out and voting for the pretenders? How has this extraordinary state of affairs come about? A number of fundamental causes suggest themselves. First, the emergence of a new global post-industrial economic order over the past three decades, based upon renewable energy and novel technologies and ruled by new global elites, has created deep-seated ideological divisions within all traditional conservative parties in the West. Now, I disagree with this a little bit. This idea we have new global... No, we don't. We have a new generation of global... If we're calling global elites those who are actually holding power, those who call the shots, I would say we do not have new global elites. I don't think any of you think that either. What we do have is a new generation of global elites that aren't, quite honestly, very good at what the previous generations were. The previous generations understood the importance of staying more low-key, shall we say, a little more subtle in their approach. This newer generation that has now come to power behind the scenes, you know, they're just pretty much in your face, and they figure, well, what are you going to do about it? Sure, we're calling the shots. What are you going to do about it? I don't think we have a new set of global elites. If we had a change in people calling the shots, then you would see some form of substantive change in policy. And we don't see that. We see what? Unlimited support for Israel, no matter what. We're not changing the economies for the better. This idea of, you know, renewable energy and technologies. These are ghosts. The renewable energy scam is already here in the U.S., at least, is falling apart, and it's demonstrably falling apart in Europe. Where are they at now? They're able to, in places like Germany and such, they're able to play along with the green agenda as long as they were still powering things that mattered with cheap Russian gas. You can sit there and put up your windmills and your solar panels and jerk yourself off pretending like you're saving the planet. All that's well and good when the things that matter, you're powering with cheap Russian natural gas. Now that the cheap Russian natural gas has been taken away, Where's your renewables gotten you? You know, we find the shocking to some, not to us. It was all that's just a game. That's not real. It was another, look, this renewable, this green energy thing, it's just another money scam. I was talking to somebody the other day and I was pointing out, look, our economy today, and I was talking about here in the U.S., but really you can apply this to the West in general, is largely composed of various forms of money scams. That's our economy. The stock markets, all of this stuff. Look, these are money scams. When people can get rich or be completely destroyed on things like shorting a market, look, those are money scams. There's nothing productive happening. This is just casino gambling. And of course, it's rigged. Those on the inside are always going to win. You're always going to lose. And yet people try to participate because that's the economy now. We don't have any substantial, what are we actually producing? It's very important. The green agenda is another money scam, and it's already coming apart. Hence, the now unbridgeable divisions that exist within these parties over net zero, mass immigration, so-called culture wars issues, transgender rights, etc. And for the UK Conservative Party, the additional divisive issue of Brexit. Hence also the ongoing destructive debates within these parties as to whether they should embrace a right-wing populist agenda or remain committed to a centrist, more traditional conservative political program. This fundamental ideological division reveals itself most pathetically in the sad phenomenon of former conservative leaders like Liz Truss and Scott Morrison finding new careers post-politics as sycophantic bit players at Donald Trump rallies in America. Now, I think one of the things that's interesting that's pointed out here is, you know, these debates, whether they should embrace a populist agenda, remain committed to a centrist, you notice there's nothing they actually believe in. You know, when he talks about Liz Truss and Scott Morrison, you know, going up and now trying to stand up there with Trump. And none of these people actually believe anything. And I think that says a whole lot about the system itself. You see, there's no reason for them to believe anything because the people who they work for are unchanged. It doesn't matter if they go out and pose as populist. It doesn't matter if they go out and pretend to be against migration or for migration. Or what. At the end of the day, they're going to follow orders. So of course they don't. They're just sitting here and they're debating amongst themselves of the best way to fool the people. You know, but what's the best line of bullshit we can baffle them with that they'll actually buy into? And in the case of the Tories, and I believe America's in the same, we're just a little further behind the curve with the Republican Party. At some point in time, people, they're just not going to buy it anymore. You can lie to them so many times, and then they just throw up their hands. And I think this is one of the things that the author of this is kind of missing the forest for the trees. Excuse me. While the article is focused on the trouble these conservative parties are in, I think that's more symptomatic of the problem that the democracy system itself is in. When you have these two-party systems, say in the UK with the Tories versus the Labour Party, or in America with the Republicans versus the Democrats, when it becomes such a sham, such an obvious fake, that people just throw up their hands and quit voting for the one party, you don't just have a problem for the one party. This signifies a wider issue for the democracy system itself, a crisis, an impending, an incoming crisis for this democracy system itself. Because if people quit buying in, the legitimacy collapses and the whole system cannot stand without some form, at least a facade of legitimacy. I've said this before, I'll say it again. You have quote-unquote dictators and they have an election and get 95%. Now, sometimes they really do because they have good policies. But why do they hold elections? Because they have to have legitimacy. The people have to buy into it. They have to say, okay, well, we're not just being ruled over. We have a say in this and yeah, this guy's okay. If you have an election in the UK or Australia or America or Germany, wherever, and nobody shows up for the election, they can't pretend. You see, when the Tories got drubbed out in the UK, they just pretended like everybody decided to give Labour a shot. No, they didn't. The people just didn't bother showing up for the Tories anymore. What if they have another? You notice they haven't had another election? Keir Starmer is so unpopular, it's laughable. Like, the lowest ever. As if that were possible. And you notice they're not calling for another election? You know why that is? I believe one of the reasons is because if they do, there's a real danger that no one's going to show up. People aren't going to say, wow, Keir Starmer's so bad. Let's give the Tories another go. No, they're not. Not this soon. So if they were to hold a special election and now no one shows up to vote for the Tories and no one goes to show up to vote for the Labour Party, and say you wound up hypothetically with a 5% turnout and nobody wants any of them, what do you do then? Now you have a crisis in the system itself. And this is what I think kind of gets missed here, is this isn't just a crisis for these traditional conservative parties. This is a crisis for the democracy system itself. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. No contemporary political party that lacks ideological coherence can expect to achieve any degree of political success in the West, because an increasingly cynical and alienated electorate will not vote for a party that is racked with internal divisions and cannot commit to a clear political program. Again, the problem isn't that commit to a clear political program. They have committed to that. The Tories have committed over and over that they're going to do something about the migration problem. And the problem is they don't ever actually do it. Second, these conservative parties, although in power for most of the past two decades, have resolutely refused to implement the kind of radical economic and social reforms necessary to remedy the serious economic inequalities and social problems that continue to bedevil all Western liberal democracies. Well, they don't, because they can't. These people aren't actually running anything. They're allowed a little bit, you know, stuff that doesn't matter. But when it comes to the big shot, you know, the big calls, the big relevant decisions, they're following orders. This is becoming more and more evident. In fact, despite their professed commitment to traditional values, conservative parties have, just like their social democratic counterparts, enthusiastically embraced and implemented the economic, cultural, and foreign policies of the new and now dominant global elites. And again, they're the same policies. We have a new elite, but yet we're getting the same policy. What really has changed? It's gone into hyper overdrive. I think that just shows that there is a new generation of the same elites. The old ones were just smarter. It can look like, oh, we got new people running things now, but they're essentially the same people. It's just a new generation, and they're dumber. And these elites, it must be said, are perhaps the most avaricious, narcissistic, and ideologically fanatical ruling class to have ever emerged in the modern West. In fact, they make the 19th century European liberal bourgeoisie, there we go, look like civilized ruling class and benefactors, not only to the lower orders, but mankind generally. Is it any wonder, then, that ordinary voters in the West, who have been brutally displaced economically and culturally by globalization, these voters include both the traditional working class and the old nation-state-based middle class, have deserted conservative parties that promised to protect their interests, but cynically failed to do so for 20 years. Populism is clearly a false hope, but it has a unified ideology and political program, and populist leaders, unlike conservative politicians, have not yet shown conclusively to be nothing more than the corrupt lackeys of the new global elites. Third, the quality and political judgment of recent conservative political leaders in the UK and Australia has been simply appalling. Conservative parties were once led by statesmen like Churchill and Menzies, for example, but that has not been the case for decades. The less said about David Cameron, who single-handedly created the Brexit fiasco, Theresa May, Liz Truss, who George Galloway once aptly described as thick as might as mince in a bottle, and Rishi Sunak, the better. And when the UK Conservative Party finally elected a leader who could win elections, by promising to level up those left behind by globalization, Boris Johnson, it foolishly and jealously deposed him for the egregious crime of failing to strictly observe the COVID lockdown rules. Now, I don't know anybody that really believes Boris Johnson. Well, Boris Johnson spent his time running over making sure Ukraine didn't sign an early peace deal with Russia. That's what Boris Johnson has done. Boris Johnson has spent his time, even after being out of office, making sure the Ukraine conflict keeps going on. I don't think anybody seriously believes Boris Johnson was going to really level up the playing field. What we're talking about here is rhetoric. They're just, what rhetoric? They could win the election with this populist rhetoric. He actually could win an election by promising to level. He's not going to level up anything. These are order takers. What we have now is we're so late in this usury-based, basically, Ponzi scheme economy in the West that now we're just down to, they're just strip mining what's left. The little bit of money that is left in people's pockets, they're just strip mining what's left before the whole thing burns to the ground. And the facade of these elections is starting to wear pretty thin. Now, I was saying earlier, you know, this is a crisis of democracy, not just conservative politicians and parties. And, you know, I think we're really getting closer than a lot of people believe to end-stage democracy, to this democracy system basically imploding on itself. You look at the things they're doing and all of this, you know, wanting to create this technological control grid and all this crazy stuff they're wanting to do. These aren't the actions of people who are confident in their positions of power. These are acts of people who are obviously scared to death that the whole thing's going to implode, and then where are they going to be? And then I got to thinking, this is so obvious. If it's obvious to someone like me, I mean, maybe they're imploding it on purpose, because we don't know what comes after. The democracy system's on the way out. I mean, this is not sustainable. These Western democracy systems, they're set to collapse on themselves. I don't know when or what that will look like. The big question mark is what's coming up afterwards. And perhaps these people, these same global elites, it's not new ones, you know, maybe they've got a new system lined up and they're about ready to roll it out. So maybe this is just strip mine what's left of it, let it collapse, and then present the new system, which, of course, in the end, they themselves will also be running. And I think we're seeing some signs that that may be what they've got in store. I don't know. But that's another possibility. We don't want to rule that out. The Conservative Coalition in Australia has been similarly bereft of competent leaders since the centrist John Howard, who was Prime Minister from 1996 until 2007, an era before the complete domination of the new global economy, and one when globalist ideologies could still be ignored by conservative political leaders. Tony Abbott was a divisive and incompetent prime minister, and his own party deposed him after only 18 months in office. Scott Morrison and Peter Dutton were political lightweights who struggled to keep a deeply divided party from splintering altogether. What then does the future hold for the UK Conservative Party and the Conservative Coalition in Australia? If the events of the past few weeks are any indication, the future of both parties is bleak in the extreme. The performance of the beleaguered Conservative leader, Kimmy Bodenoc, at the recent Conservative Party conference was simply pathetic. Still refusing to outline the party's policy agenda, Bodenoc sought to win over British voters by promising to abolish stamp duty. One can well imagine the reaction of ordinary UK voters struggling to pay their power bills and tired of funding the conflict in Ukraine to this wonderfully grand policy announcement. Bodenoc's keynote address contained endless platitudes and absolutely no insight into her party's rapidly intensifying decline. We are the party who can deliver a stronger economy and secure our borders, said Bodenoc, apparently having forgotten about her own party's abysmal record on these issues when in government for over a decade. Now, I want to pause here and again point out the U.S. is in the same position. If you're an American, don't sit there and say, wow, we're not there. we're just slightly behind the curve on this. We're roughly, say, 9 to 10 months into Trump's second round here. And this is a disaster. I mean, MAGA's done. That fantasy is over. So we've got 3 more years of, you know, how much more dedicated to Israel can Trump be? His performance, I don't know how much of it y'all have read about or caught of Trump's address before the Israeli Knesset, but that was some of the most, that was just disgusting. I mean, standing up there bragging about what he's doing. I mean, MAGA is not just a meme anymore. I mean, bragging about, well, how often the Adelsons came to tell him what to do and how much he's done for Israel. If only we had that kind of, that's why I say it's ridiculous to say we have a new global elite when you have this playing out in public, this public groveling. The whole thing, the whole scene, you know, people have highlighted of Netanyahu with one of his many trips to the White House and Trump there pulling his chair out like a servant boy. The only people holding on to MAGA are just people completely lost in coping with the fact that the system is in decline. Well, this is done. You know, more and more people, I see more and more normal people coming out and saying, we're not going to vote our way out of this. In other words, the democracy system is over. MAGA was this last gasp at trying to make the system work. And the second version of Trump, which is obviously, how do I want to put this? Look, Trump's first term was kind of an anomaly. They underestimated and they didn't rig the election enough. They kind of took him lightly and blew him off as a clown, and they screwed it up. I mean, that was obviously not planned, and that bothered them. He didn't really accomplish anything because they still hold the levers of control, but they're so obsessive with having this micromanaging control of everything. They didn't like the idea that this one guy managed to get in and he's at least saying things that we don't like. The 2020 election is a laughable fraud. Nobody liked Joe Biden. He never campaigned, that he couldn't get 5 people to show up in a gymnasium at a high school somewhere, and he won with more votes than anybody ever. That was laughable. And then now 2024 comes around and Trump gets reelected. And I still read serious people that I respect, and they talk about, you know, Trump got in there the second time because so many people just, and no, that's not what happened. You know, they brought all these charges. And I was saying all throughout that election that what you're witnessing is Trump negotiating with those in power to let him go in again. And that's exactly what happened. Notice all the criminal charges against him went away. They finally came to a deal on what kind of collateral he would put forward, showing that he would stay on the reservation. And whatever that is, they came to that deal. And the deal has been struck. So that's why you've gotten this completely new version of the second round of Trump, which is nothing like the first round, where at least you think the guy did kind of want to do some things. Now you have this thing and all you have are these disgusting, sycophantic displays towards Israel. And really going to crack down on anti-Semitism. We've got 3 more years of this new version of Trump. And at the rate we're going, what's left of MAGA will be completely burned out. And then you will see in the U.S., I mean, what, they're going to run Vance? I'm sure people run out and do that when they didn't get anything that they were hoping for out of Trump 2.0. I think then you're going to see, yeah, the Democrats will probably win by default because the Republicans are just going to throw their hands up and say, well, you know, what's the point? If Badenoch relieves such nonsense, and she is a downright moron, a phrase coined by the American journalist H.L. Mencken to describe American politicians in the 1920s. If she does not, then she's a downright liar. Badenoch, of course, remains leader on sufferance, still there only because her potential challenger, the right-wing Robert Jenrick, does not wish to depose her until after next year's May council elections, at which the conservatives are expected to be decimated. The latest polls show the conservatives at around 17% support, lagging behind not only reform and labor, but also the liberal Democrats. Meanwhile, the number of disaffected conservative politicians defecting to reform continues to increase. The coalition in Australia has fared little better than the UK conservatives since its crushing election loss at the hands of Labour earlier this year. Ridden with bitter internal divisions over net zero emissions and mass immigration, the party elected a moderate female leader, Susan Ley, by a very slim margin after the recent election defeat. Unfortunately, Ley is an embarrassing antipodean version of Liz Truss, and like Badenoch, she steadfastly refuses to set out a policy agenda until closer to the next election, a ploy designed to avoid bitter internal policy disputes, which only causes the party to appear to stand for nothing. That's because they don't stand for anything. None of them do. They all stand for the same thing. This is just a debate over how best to fool people to keep buying into the system. I said this before when I said I was not going to vote in the 2024 election, and I'm glad I didn't. If you don't vote, people say, well, if you don't vote, then you're not trying to do... No, by not voting, you are voting. Because when you vote, you are lending legitimacy to the system. By choosing not to vote, you are making a statement that this system is illegitimate. It is a vote against the legit. By not voting, it is a vote against the legitimacy of the system. Now, people say, you're going to vote. What if Kamala Harris wins and Trump doesn't get in there? How are you feeling about that Trump vote now? I'm already reading articles from people who I back a year ago said they were going to hold their nose and vote for Trump because Kamala would be such the worst of two evils. And now those same people are writing articles admitting they screwed up and now they feel bad because they voted for this guy. Why do floundering conservative parties in a desperate attempt to win the female vote cynically elect incompetent women leaders, all the while intending to replace them before the next election? Such transparent virtue signaling surely fools no one, least of all female voters. Two right-wing shadow cabinet members recently resigned over Ley's moderate stance on net zero and immigration, and it is clear that Ley's potential right-wing challenger, Andrew Hastie, a Robert Jenrick clone, is simply biding his time, perhaps until the early next year, to depose her. And a bitter squabbling continues within the coalition this week. Former National Party leader and Deputy Prime Minister Barnaby Joyce announced that he is leaving the coalition to join the extremist right-wing One Nation Party, where he will be free to campaign against net zero and mass immigration. Meanwhile, Tony Abbott, the failure of a former prime minister who predicted that Rishi Sunak would win last year's UK election and is now proffering gratuitous advice to Badenoch, has mounted a ruthless campaign in conjunction with the Murdoch media to depose the hapless Ley as leader. Some extremely deluded right-wing liberals are even suggesting that Abbott return to parliament and run for leader himself. The Abbott-controlled right wing of the coalition believes that a Trumpian agenda can win over the Australian voters to the coalition, despite the fact that Peter Dutton briefly flirted with Trumpism at the recent election and was punished by voters for having done so. This again, though, these are just arguments over how to fool everybody. The problem is nobody's buying the bullshit anymore. It doesn't matter. Look, if they put trying to copy Trump is going to work when the original is showing how the system works. You're not going to be able to be in Australia or the UK and come out and try to do I'm the Australian version of Donald Trump, when you can look at the original they're copying and see what you've got. Again, I think what we're seeing here is a crisis in the system itself, in the democracy system itself. It doesn't matter what line of bullshit you come up with. At some point, even though I'm convinced that people are dumber than they've ever been before, it's so obvious that even the morons are starting to figure it out. When you're so incompetent at fooling people that you've got a populace that overwhelmingly consists of absolute idiots and morons, and you can't even fool them. You can't even fool absolute morons because your shit's so lame. You've got a real problem here. And Prime Minister, I want to finish this out. And Prime Minister Albanese's extraordinary successful meeting with Donald Trump at the White House this week, Trump described him as, quote, a great leader, has made Abbott and his deranged supporters look like the political deals that they are. Don't they understand that Trump admires political winners, not failures that sycophantically mimic him? Not surprisingly, the coalition's poll figures have recently plummeted to around 25%, its lowest figure ever. One disgruntled liberal senator recently, aptly, described the coalition as a, quote, clown show. In fact, the parallels between the calamitous predicaments of the Conservative parties in the UK and Australia are as striking as they are dire. The UK Conservative Party, controlled as it is by an increasingly popular Reform Party, is clearly finished as an effective political force. So too is the Conservative coalition in Australia. Although it may linger on for longer than its UK counterpart, simply because no populist party has yet emerged in this country to challenge it directly. Such is the well-deserved fate of both of these conservative parties, led by political non-entities, deeply divided ideologically, and unable to formulate a coherent policy agenda, let alone comprehend or meaningfully respond to the legitimate demands of the increasing number of economically disadvantaged and culturally alienated voters in both the UK and Australia. And I would point out that's a feature, not a bug. When was the last time the people got anything they voted for? You know, I mean, now it's just, again, the people running things are so stupid that they, I talked about how people have gotten dumber. The mass of people, you know, the populations as a whole, people have gotten dumber and they can't fool morons. Well, one of the reasons is because the people, these quote unquote elites, they're dumber too. The idiocy has spread. It's a pandemic. If the Reform Party in the UK, and I don't know, again, I'm not up on these foreign politics. I wanted to do this story because I know we're so America-centric here lately, and we have listeners from all over the world, and you get sick of hearing things about America. So I wanted to do this to at least delve into UK and Australian politics for a change. But look, the Reform Party would just, if the Reform Party, let's say they have an election in the UK and the Reform Party comes forward. All that's going to be is a UK version of trying to MAGA. In other words, you're not going to get anything different. I'm going to look, if you're in the UK, I'm going to tell you, if you're hyped about Farage and the Reform Party, let me just go ahead and tell you, you're not going to get anything different. If you get them in a landslide, that's me tapping on my wrist like I have a watch on. Screen cap it. You're not getting anything different. You're going to get some rhetoric. They may even do a few window dressing things that people can clap and celebrate for. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get more of, well, we got to tighten the belt. We're going to have more austerity. We got to continue to pour more money into the money scam that is the Ukraine. More money into the money scam that is the green energy nonsense. More money scams, because that's our economies now in the West. You're going to get, look, you're going to be disillusioned. And what? How long is that going to last? One more election cycle? You know? In other words, they're just buying time. If they put the Reform Party in, you're going to get the same thing because same people are calling the shots. That's why there's no difference. There's no difference. They're talking about these global elites. Look, there's no difference. It doesn't matter who you vote for. It doesn't matter if you don't vote at all. People are complaining. Dan, you got to vote for Trump. You're not going to be able to complain if Harris gets in there. If Harris had got in there, what do you really think would be different today than what we've got now? I'll tell you what would be different. I'm going to answer my own question. If Harris was putting the National Guard on the streets, people would be in up in arms and complaining about it. But since Trump's doing it, it's okay. So if Harris was in there, it would be more of what we've had for the past, say, 5 years or so of demonizing the quote-unquote right wing. Well, Trump comes in and they flip the script and now we're demonizing the left wing, rhetorically, of course, not in substance. And so people are okay with it. They're going to crack down on these, on these left wingers. Finally, we're getting some payback. See, that's why I had to be changed out. That's why they have to change them out every so often. But at some point, even the mass of morons is going to notice that it doesn't make any difference. You change the faces, you change the middle management. At the end of the day, the same people are calling the shots. You can put reform in there, and you know what you're going to get? More immigration. Guarantee it. Vote the Tories, more immigration. Labor Party, more immigration. Notice, where do you get a say in any of this? More money poured into the black hole of Ukraine. You know, as I say, this is more of a crisis of democracy than a crisis isolated to political parties. The big question is going to be, what comes after? Do we shed the quote-unquote global elites and actually find something that works for the people? Or do the global elites already have a new system queued up, ready to present to us, ready to try to convince us to buy into after the old system goes away? We'll just have to wait and see. We're going to wrap up on that note. Again, I appreciate y'all joining with us. I appreciate you bearing with us. I don't know yet if Dr. Johnson is going to have a Daily Nationalist up tomorrow. If he does, I will get that up for you. If not, I guess this is it for the week. Hopefully things will, I anticipate things being more or less back to normal next week. Look forward to things changing here on Radio Albion. Give you something to look forward to. So as always, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.